Dr. Shireen Ebadi, the first woman ever to become a judge in Iran and the first Muslim woman to win the Peace Prize. There will also be service projects, workshops in leadership, civic engagement, peace building, and more. Again, that's the Peace Jam Northwest on Saturday, April 7th and Sunday, April 8th at the Erb Memorial Union on the University of Oregon campus in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm. on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch. News you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell, and I want to jump right into the program today. It's 9:01 Pacific time. 34-year-old Saeed Vassil, who was known for walking around Brooklyn's Crown Heights with an orange Bible and sometimes acting out his bipolar suffering, found a bent pipe yesterday, a bent pipe attached to a canister. It looked like a kind of steampunk shower head. But Saeed started waving it around, apparently just for laughs, pretending it was a gun. Someone called police. Black man with a gun. Police obligingly showed up and blew Saeed away, shooting him 10 times, shooting him dead, without ever saying one word to him. Compare and contrast to the many white people who have been politely talked down when holding a real loaded gun. TheRoot.com, citing a witness, says the officers pulled up to Vassil in an unmarked police car. The witness said a plainclothes officer got out of the passenger seat and fired at Vassil numerous times. Quoting The Root, according to NYPD Chief of Department Terrence A. Monahan, none of the officers were wearing body cameras. The plainclothes officers were part of an anti-crime unit, and the uniformed officers were part of the strategic response group that is usually assigned to major events and hotspots of crime. End quote. White America says it could have been a gun, and white America says, what would you do in a split second? And white America says all its white America stuff, of course, once again. 329 dead this year and counting. And that's not 329 people shot, 329 dead. And I could use the word disproportionate, or I could cite statistics, but the one thing to remember is seven times. Seven times more likely to be killed if you're black. Seven times. We live under a terror menace. It wears a badge. We don't have to. I think we should pay attention to who we're electing to city council. We should pay attention to what happens when you conform in a police state. From Radio Havana, Cuba, millions of French commuters were affected on Wednesday as train traffic has been heavily disrupted during the second day of rolling strikes staged by French rail workers against the planned major cutback of the state-run SNCF railway operator. The company said only one in seven of the high-speed trains would run, and half of scheduled regional trains would be affected by the strikes on Wednesday. On Monday evening, the country's unions started a series of months-long rolling nationwide rail strikes, with a wave of two successive days off out of every 5 days. They planned 36 days of action for the April-June period, a move that may paralyze the Eurozone's second economic power and one of the world's top tourism destinations. They are pressuring President Emmanuel Macron to reconsider plans to scrap preferential terms of rail workers, including retirement on full pension at 52, a decade earlier than other French employees. And Jacobin magazine reports the strike is far more widespread than rail and hints at elements of the 1968 uprising. I bring this up because the theme of this show is attitude. What happens when you don't have an attitude? And I mean a capital A attitude. The sort that you get when you correctly assess the situation. In France, the workers understand that they work in order to live. They do not live in order to work. There seems to be a misperception in the United States that we live in order to work. That is simply wrong. It's reversed. And it's wonderful that the rail workers can retire on full pension at the age of 52 because rail work wears you out. As a retired bus driver, I can tell you transportation work can wear you out. And I have seen many of my fellow workers worn out and now dead without enjoying any of their pension. I am enjoying my pension. I'm a member of a union. You should be. It's the responsible thing to do. Cop an attitude towards capitalism. From La Izquierda Diario in Mexico City, Kirsten Nielsen, Secretary of Internal Security, the Department of Homeland Security, the United States Trump administration announced that the deployment of the National Guard on the border of Mexico to support the tasks of the Border Patrol will be immediate and suggests that this could happen overnight. President Donald Trump signed the order on Wednesday. His office and the Department of Defense are meeting with governors of border states, Texas, California, Arizona, and New Mexico to define and coordinate this deployment that did not detail numbers, deadlines, or costs. Nielsen ruled out that the action will have an effect on the relationship with the Mexican government. Quote, they understand the administration's desire to control illegal crossings. They understand and respect our national sovereignty. I appreciate your recent support to answer the annual caravan and signing of several security-related agreements last week. I value your society, and I do not expect this operation to affect that relationship, end quote. Again, that's from DHS Officer Nielsen. And Izquierda Diario writes, trust in the obedience and subordination of the soldado Peña Nieto to the orders of Washington. And speaking for myself, in fact, Peña Nieto dithered on the issue yesterday, according to La Crónica, also from Mexico City, saying that he would wait for a further clarification of Trump's intent before taking a stance. Returning to the text, according to the official, the deployment is a measure to stop illegal migration. I wanted to give you the words of the Mexican press on this. Here's what the Cuban press says. From Radio Havana, Cuba, amid increasing pressure from the U.S. administration of Donald Trump, the Mexican government Monday evening made efforts to disperse the refugee caravan consisting of over 1,300 migrants from Central America. The halted caravan is currently in the town of Matias Romero Avendado in the southern state of Oaxaca, according to the Washington Post. The move comes after Trump, Sunday, threatened to cut off immigration programs like DACA as he targeted the refugee caravan with nearly 1,350 migrants who were en route to Mexico and the United States on an arduous journey from the city of Tapachula and the state of Chiapas on the Mexico-Guatemala border to demand an end to the political corruption in their cities and the dignity and the right to asylum from Mexico and the United States. Now, speaking for myself, that need for end of political corruption and dignity and right to asylum is simply an effort to save their lives. That's how bad things are in U.S.-dominated Central America, particularly in Honduras, dominated by the U.S. military base, which takes up most of the land of Tegucigalpa. Returning to the RHC article, the caravan was organized by Pueblos Sin Fronteras, or People Without Borders, a refugee and migrant rights organization. Pueblos Sin Fronteras said in a statement, the unprecedented number of people who have joined the current refugee caravan and the high percentage of people fleeing Honduras in the group are the result of multiple political crises in the region provoked in large part by the policies of the U.S. government, end quote. The group further pointed out, quoting, the systematic violence encountered throughout the migrant route in Mexico is exacerbated by anti-immigrant enforcement policies backed by the U.S. government, end quote. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. I'm talking about copying an attitude. I have a list. I call it Teresa's List. I'll start off with subsidies to oil corporations. How much are subsidies to oil corporations worldwide? They're $1 trillion. Amount needed to feed every hungry person on Earth? $30 billion, less than 3% of total oil subsidies. Amount for new exploration and production subsidies that you pay annually to U.S. oil corporations, $20.5 billion free money for coal and oil barons. Amount paid out in SNAP benefits. Have you ever wondered about that? How much is paid out in supplemental nutrition, you know, food stamp benefits? Well, it's $70.9 billion annually, supplied roughly 44.2 million Americans, 14% of the population, with an average of $125.51 for each person per month in food assistance. That's from Wikipedia. And remember, you can't spend your palatial $32 per week on just any non-food items. Quoting like soaps, paper products, deodorant, household supplies, pet food, hot foods, food items that are consumable in the store, or vitamins and medicines, end quote. None of that. And you may say, wait just a damn minute, Teresa. That adds up. I can use a calculator. That's only 5.529 billion actually distributed to hungry people. So what's the other 64 billion going to? Well, that goes to administrative costs. Or in other words, to the salaried personnel and the fine marble buildings they work from, calling you up, sending you letter after letter to make damn certain you don't share your tomatoes with your son-in-law. Yes, this culture is that mean. You need people's journalism. You cannot do without it. You need public affairs analysis here in Portland. I want to talk about something that shows you why you should have an attitude. On the consent agenda for yesterday's city council meeting, there was a little old agenda item 323. When it's on the consent agenda, that means they have no intention of discussing it. It's no big deal. Business as usual. Item 323 related to a section of Halsey and Weiler Streets just off Northeast 32nd Avenue, right by that big Fred Meyer Kroger store, as you may know if you live on the east side of Portland. I wrote to the office of Councilman Dan Saltzman and politely asked just how much the city was receiving in return for ceding those streets to a condo developer, and how much acreage were we talking. The polite and timely response was, "Good afternoon, Teresa, and thank you for the inquiry. The area proposed for a vacation is 12,000 square feet or 0.28 acres. Both street segments combined, Oregon Revised Statute 271, the letter said, limits a municipality to cost recovery, administrative costs, when vacating the public's interest in a dedicated right-of-way. Hence, we do not make, and that word make is in scare quotes, money off this vacation the same way a landowner would make money off the sale of property. Hope that helps clarify the situation." Signed, Matthew Grum, Senior Policy Director, Office of Commissioner Dan Saltzman. Now, this guy is on the ball, and I appreciate it. So I read ORS Section 271. And I wrote back that afternoon, quote, "Dear Matt, thank you for your reply. An examination of ORS 271.005 through 271.795 revealed no such prohibition. Could you be more specific? Thank you, Teresa M., end quote. And this morning, I got a reply. And the reply quoted James A. Redden, Attorney General, talking about, evidently, the situation in which a city, a municipality, vacates a road, and from the context, I believe it refers to vacating a property because the city wants to, as opposed to whether the developer wants to. And it says, in its 1979 opinion from James A. Redden, quoting, "While reasonable fees for the cost of the vacation are permitted, we find no statutory authorization for a further requirement that a property owner pay the appraised value of the property. In short, we believe that the exaction of fees or conditions equaling the appraised value of the land under the vacated street or road would be held invalid by a court," end quote. Now, of course, this context is one in which the city wants to vacate the property, whether the property owner likes it or not. This case is a case in which the two stubs of streets are within a large development that is being developed at considerable anticipated profit, and it is simply a giveaway. However, I would like to point out that there is nothing illegal about this. It doesn't matter now that 12,000 square feet has been given to a rich developer. And the reason I bring this up at all is to point out to you that there are different rules in the society for the rich and for the rest of us. And this sort of thing goes on all the time in various ways. You are not operating in a meritocracy, nor are you living in a democracy. If you want 12,000 square feet of land in a prime real estate area in Portland, you can just, well, you can just be born white and or enjoy at least a middle-class upbringing without substantial interruptions such as divorce, madness, sickness, abusive child rearing, or bankruptcy. Attend a respected college with sufficient funds to get an advanced degree without suffering a setback such as a major car collision, loss of time due to illness, and you can then luck into an economic sector that is still functioning with your degree. You can work for a decade or so also without being struck by any of those ineluctable fates, and you can put down a substantial fraction of $1 million and buy it. That's how you do it. And if you're cozy with the city council and already have enough bucks just to set it up and knock it down, you can have it for free. And oh, by the way, all legal forms, including posting notices on the now private property, were observed. There's nothing illegal about what I just described, but just you try getting free title to a street or two. Go right ahead. Now back to my list. The Pentagon annual budget is $700 billion. That's $2,000 from every man, woman, child, and newborn baby in the United States. Of course, it isn't taxed exactly that way. Notice that the taxed amount is nearly double the amount the average recipient of food subsidies gets. Note that it is more than half the U.S. budget. In 2011, the mean income for the lowest one-fifth of income earners in the United States was $11,239, adjusted for $2018 inflation. That amount would be $12,707.16. Those were the days, eh? The main income for the same group in 2015 was $12,457. Just think of the sacks of potatoes you could have gotten with that missing $250. Too bad the lowest quintile isn't living in 1976, when they got $14,000 adjusted for inflation. The mean income for the upper fifth of the United States in 76, by the way, was in 2018 dollars, $302,000, which is great. And it's more than $350,000 now. The richest 1% are raking in $10 million each. They say they're overtaxed, too, and just can't stand it, the poor things. A list of facts. The vaporization point of carbon steel is 4,940 degrees Fahrenheit. Notice I said the vaporization point, not the melting point. The maximum adiabatic temperature of burning kerosene is 3,801 Fahrenheit, more than 1,000 degrees too cool. The number of carbon steel skyscrapers that have exploded into vaporized dust and neatly fallen into their own basements is 3. World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7. The number of carbon steel skyscrapers that have exploded into dust from aircraft fires is 0. The number of dead from U.S. post 9/11 wars is 370,000, at least, with 10 million made refugees. The number of those people who suffered for a just cause is 0. The cost of a 100-foot luxury yacht is $275 million. The cost of a decent-looking, functioning used car with airbags is 1/1000th that amount. Don't forget to kick the tires. The average cost of an apartment in the Pearl District near downtown Portland is $1,798 a month. The amount that you could earn as a barista if you could get full-time, which you can't, is $1,920 a month. And if you live in the Pearl or anywhere in Portland, that leaves you short on rent after taxes. The total cost of the F-35 fighter jet program is $406 billion. The amount of time it takes for one of those to be shot down by an advanced Russian missile is less than a minute. The total cost of allowing corporate imperial Jim Crow capitalism to rule us is utter subjugation and the complete destruction of the planetary ecosystem. You're listening to Press Watch. My name is Teresa Mitchell. This is KBOO Portland. I'm trying to get you to cop an attitude, and I want you to do something about the condition that you're in. A lot of you listening to me right now are in debt. The following excerpt from Strike Debt's publication, The Debt Resistors Operations Manual, will be interrupted by my comments and observations. So download the manual for free at strikedebt.org and look on the KBOO website for information on Strike Debt events coming up in Portland, in the Portland area. Getting contacted by a debt collector can rank among one of the worst experiences of everyday life, and it happens over 1 billion times each year in the United States, according to industry estimates. Debt collection has become a complex global industry reliant on strong-arm tactics, including harassing phone calls and threats that are often illegal. The coercion runs along a spectrum from moral persuasion to threats of violence and increasingly involves institutions such as the courts and law enforcement. Given the complexity of debt collection laws and regulations that vary from state to state, there are hundreds of ways a debt collector can engage in illegal practices, and it's important to know your rights and to record abusive and illegal practices. In many cases, your debt can be erased due to collectors' misconduct or reduced. In some cases, you might even have the right to sue for damages. Debt collectors count on you not to do your homework. They count on you to be an easy mark and to be overwhelmed by bureaucracy, harassment, and shame. Our current economic downturn only amplifies the problem. Most people have less money and more debt. Debt collectors themselves are making less money per account. It's highly labor-intensive, with collectors making contact with only about 15 out of 200 or more targets, causing more aggressive and increasingly illegal tactics. Even if collectors do not engage in activities and techniques that are technically illegal, they are likely to use intentionally deceptive practices. So, with my remaining time here, I will try to read from this and briefly describe some of the laws around debt collection, the different ways debt is collected, who is hurt most by the debt collection industry, and what you can do to protect yourself, your family, and your community. And before I get too far into this, I want to say that you could have a free consultation with a bankruptcy lawyer. Did you know that? A free consultation. Now think about this. Even if you decide not to file bankruptcy, you will come away, because of the information that you will learn, you will come away from that lawyer, from that conversation, free conversation, feeling much, much better about your financial situation. If you're in debt trouble, stop thinking about suicide and start looking up bankruptcy lawyers. I have directed at least two people besides myself to a lawyer, and yes, I have filed bankruptcy before, and they both came away with a completely uplifted emotional state. It's that good. It's free. Do you want to be miserable and stressed, or do you want to know the facts? Just do it. It's the responsible thing to do. Don't believe that voice in your head that says it's a loser thing to do. That's a trick. That's capitalism talking to you. Don't believe it. Look up a bankruptcy lawyer. Go talk to a bankruptcy lawyer for free. Decide what you want to do. You need that information, and you will find it unbelievably relieving. You'll feel so much better. The debt collection industry, also known as accounts receivable management, or ARM for short, is financed by Wall Street and closely tied to credit card issuers and other lenders such as collection companies, offshore call centers, big law firms, and debt speculators. And speaking for myself, sometimes when you get a call, it's actually from a prison. People working for the industry. Each year, over 300,000 debt collectors amass more than $50 billion in debt, profiting over $10 billion total. The collection industry has expanded significantly in recent years, shadowing the rise of consumer credit. From 2000 until the end of 2010, commercial banks doubled the amount of consumer loans. Should consumers default, the debt collection industry is ready. The number of U.S. consumers subject to third-party debt collectors has doubled since 2000. And it's, speaking for myself, it's those third-party debt collectors that you are most likely to run into. And I would also comment that you'll notice from 2000 to the end of 2010, there was a hell of an economic downturn. How is it that credit was increased? Well, that's what we mean when we talk about predatory credit. 10 years ago, debt collectors pursued 1 in 14 people in the United States. Today, it's 1 in 7. This includes many people who fell victim to illness, scams, divorce, or unemployment, even death. Dead people are the newest frontier in debt collecting and one of the healthiest parts of the industry. That's a quote from the New York Times in 2009. Collection agencies like DCM Services are taking advantage of improved database technology to track down the kin of deceased debtors and pressure them to pay, even though they are not legally obligated to assume the debt of a spouse, sibling, or parent. I would comment that you are not morally obligated, and really, given the nature of modern international capital, you really, morally, should not pay. Credit card debt and other small loans are bought and sold like other debt obligations. For example, mortgages and student loans as part of big portfolios. The biggest are managed by the largest debt buyers. The largest collection agency, NCO Group, is owned by the nation's biggest bank, JP Morgan Chase. JP Morgan Chase and other big banks supply enormous lines of credit to the leading debt buyers, In order to generate cash flow, creditors profit at your expense on multiple levels, creating a dependent and exploitative relationship. Speaking for myself again, in the state of Oregon, they cannot garnish more than 25% of your check. But you can stop that by downloading the Debt Resistors Operation Manual. Debt Resistors Operations Manual. It's on strikedebt.org. Remember that. Debt Resistors Operations Manual. Easy to find with a search engine. Today, debt collectors increasingly rely on the civil court system and local law enforcement to secure legal judgments to garnish wages, freeze bank accounts, and seize property. According to a report by National Consumer Law Center, often the grab extends to people who have already repaid or never owed the debts. Parents, children, people with similar names, victims of identity theft, harassment, threats, and even jail become tools of the collection trade, end quote. Hundreds of district attorneys across the country have partnered with collectors in what amounts to a government-sponsored shakedown, lending out their official letterhead to give the impression that failure to pay up could lead to criminal charges. The collectors charge extra fees on top of the original payment, which typically go back to the DA's office. Now, speaking for myself, I have successfully backed off a third-party debt collector. I did it because I knew some of the facts. Here are some of the facts that you need to know. If your debt is under $10,000 in the state of Oregon, you are mandated to go to arbitration. But you won't, because it costs you $500 just to get in the door. And if you had $500, you'd be paying down that debt. But you can by demanding, well, actually just simply by writing in, contacting the office of the arbitrator and saying, I would like a petition for waiver. I did this, owing just shy of $10,000. The attorney for the other side called and asked. Well, actually, they didn't call me directly. They had the office call me and asked, did I really intend to show up? Yes, I did. They shut down everything. The debt was canceled. It's like that. There's something else you need to know. These debt, especially these third-party debt collection agencies, are scamming the law. They are required to assign the debt in court. They have to go into court and they have to pay a fee for each debt that they transfer. It has to be registered. And the fact is that they do not, and therefore they cannot legally collect your debts. They don't. They can be called out on this. You can call them out simply with paperwork. Again, you need to consult with people who really know about this sort of thing. You need to talk with a bankruptcy lawyer for free. But the collection industry in the United States simply operates in an illegal manner. I just said, reading from the Debt Resistors Operations Manual, that people who have already paid their debt are being assessed again successfully. The reason is because the debt collection agencies are not being called out on their failure to register the debt. And this is something you can do. And it has worked for me. Again, resist capitalism. Resist your own destruction. Stand up for your family. Go see a bankruptcy lawyer right now. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, going out to you 90.7 FM in Portland. Other frequencies in Cascadia and via the World Wide Web on KBOO.FM, and in that manner to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Pugs Fest 2018 on Saturday, April 7th, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. The third annual Pugs Fest is a full day of workshops. This year's theme is energy. Scheduled talks include Trees and Energy, Carbon, Conservation, and Comfort, Financial Freedom and Your Life Energy, Sparking Activism with Hip Hop and Spoken Word, and many, many more. KBOO listeners get a 20% discount with the code WELOVEKBOO, spelled with all capital letters. Again, that's PugsFest 2018 on Saturday, April 7th, 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. It's time to keep on fighting the empire. My name is Per Fograng. And yesterday was the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And we had we ran a special yesterday, an interview with William Pepper, an attorney and a friend of the King family, all about his latest book, The Plot to Kill King, describing in great detail how Martin Luther King was assassinated by, basically by the deep state. The book, it's a long book, but half of it is taken up with court documents and witness testimony. So I really recommend getting the book, and you